Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And this secret is going to be a great one. We are going to learn about the power of ketones. And we're interviewing today Lat Mansour. He's from Ketone IQ. And he's a super interesting professor. He holds a PhD in physiology, anatomy, and genetics from University of Oxford. His research focuses on type 2 diabetic heart block and hearts and hypoxia. He also holds a master's from Columbia and a bachelor's of science from University of Nottingham in biotechnology. He's a world expert in physiology and metabolism, and he's consulting with elite sports and military and clinical and research organizations, and now he's with Ketone IQ, where he's teaching us how ketones supercharge our brains and our metabolism. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And I was just telling Dr. K earlier before the camera was rolling that I was following her quite a few years ago, 5-6 years ago, when she started social media and really helping people understand different procedures, different things that you can do to help you age healthier. Yes. So it's come a full circle.
Yeah, it's so great. And I've evolved my practice so a little bit away. I do Botox fillers and surgery and lasers, those kind of things, but now much more into longevity medicine, longevity for skin science, peptides and metabolic, kind of like how to supercharge metabolism so you don't break down so fast. So I want to dive right in and learn about ketones, like what is a ketone and why is it the best preferred energy source for some parts of our body?
Great, great question. Ketones are essentially super fuel that our bodies are designed to make and designed to metabolize. A lot of people don't realize is that ketone is not a new molecule. It is not a new novel molecule that somebody created. It is actually a natural molecule that our bodies would create when we are low on glycogen and glucose. So in times where you are fasting, or if you're on a keto diet where your carbohydrates are really restricted, then your body are forced to burn down fat or forced to convert fat into ketones in the form of beta-hydroxybutyrate in your liver. Mm-hmm. The whole reason for that is because the brain primarily uses glucose, but when you are low on glucose, because of these different situations, then your brain still has to function, right? Mm-hmm. So as a result, you need that source of fuel other than glucose. Fat is a great source of fuel. However, it can't bypass the blood-brain barrier. So it needs a smaller molecule to enter the brain to be metabolized and create energy.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting mechanism that the brain has evolved in case of starvation and there's not ready sugar and snacks around.
Exactly. I think it reflects a lot on the hunter-gatherer sort of period where people won't have a refrigerator to keep foods or, you know, store all these different calories, essentially. So they have to go through a period of time where they don't have access to food. But at the same time, they still need that energy and that focus in order to get the next meal.
Yes, so there's a lot of research that suggests that ketones are really beneficial for women, postmenopausal or perimenopausal women in general, that women in general do great with ketones. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think there's Dr. Mindy Peltz. So she does, she has a book like Fasting Like a Girl, like Fast Like a Girl. She does a lot of work with women around this, around understanding ketones, how ketones help the whole menopausal process as well. And I think it could possibly also be generally women have higher percentage of fat and that they are more efficient at either oxidizing fat or turning fat into ketones and therefore more effective at it. But I think in general, ketones are good and that has been shown in studies that ketones does help with performance, both cognitive performance and physical performance. But most importantly, certain organs, like you said earlier, benefit more from ketones, such as the brain and the heart. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting to show that even kidneys are very can benefit quite a lot from ketones. It is nephroprotective, renal protective. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. So this whole intermittent fasting kind of trend, is that pushing along the idea to get your body into ketosis in order to get the benefits of fasting?
Yes. So twofold here, right? When you are doing intermittent fasting, you are restricting your calories, so you are not eating for a period of time, and that period of time, that's where your glucose goes low, and that's where you start producing ketones, so you get the benefits of ketones. However, the second layer to that is that you are also reducing your calories for either weight loss or you're retraining your body to be more insulin sensitive. Because a lot of people, when you know, if they are insulin resistant and they are already overweight and they're having this abundance of calories that is contributing to that insulin resistance, they need to somehow reset the system.
Mm-hmm.
So intermittent fasting is one way to do it. Some people use ketogenic diet. I don't really prescribe to a specific way. There's only one way. I believe that everybody is different and all our metabolisms are unique to, you know, to yourselves, and therefore different methods may be needed for different people to fix this problem.
Or even a different method for the same person within the course of their lifetime and what
challenges
that they have personally going on.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is exactly what I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up overweight. I just did, you know, calorie restriction and exercise,
mm-hmm.
and I lost all those weight.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had difficulty and plateaued when I tried to gain muscle, because at that time my body is a different body, it's a different metabolic rate, and I've got different goals. So it's not fat loss, it's more muscle mass accumulation. So it requires a slight tweak to the protocol to fit your needs.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I did a lot of intermittent fasting for a couple of years. I was very hardcore about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized it was making me very edgy in the mornings. So I had to soften it. So I do a little protein, and then I do a lot of calorie restriction that I still don't eat for a long block of hours. But I think that especially for women who are prone to stress, or they're type A, they're high cortisol level, it's important to modulate what you do. Like,
yeah.
You can't just say, I'm going to only do intermittent fasting, or I'm only going to do ketogenic diet. You have to like go with the flow a little bit.
Absolutely. And I don't think, and I think this is, we start to see more and more now. In America especially, when people talk about diets, when people talk about interventions, people are very passionate about it, right?
Yeah.
And they'll either go 100 or zero.
Yeah.
And that's not how metabolism works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Metabolism is not a linear progression. It's in a wave form where you want to keep it in an optimal zone.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want it too high, you don't want it too low, you don't want it too much, you don't want it too little.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I don't believe in a diet that you have to stick with for a very prolonged period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If you are on carnivore diet, if it works for you for autoimmune disease or whatever, great. But then after a period of time, you'll start to realize then your body needs the nutrient that you may not get from that diet.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to switch things around. And a lot of times, weight loss also comes not just because of the diet being effective, but it's because of the change in diet.
Mm-hmm.
And that change to your microbiome and that change to the macros that is causing your body that shock that it needs in order to kickstart that change, which is weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people who do not have that background in physiology and metabolism do not understand that. But thankfully, we have, you know, platforms like yours to educate people and just let people know this small nuance. And then they can just tweak a little bit and then they get results,
mm.
rather than having an overhaul of things.
That's very true. People are so rigid in their various camps of how you must do things. But I think... this year, I've been learning more about the ketogenic diet. Can you tell the audience what is exactly a ketogenic diet and what are the benefits of doing that?
Sure. So ketogenic diet is where you would consume very little carbs. Maybe about 5% of your calories come from carbs, about maybe 15 to 20% from protein, and then the rest comes from fat. So it's a very high fat diet.
Hmm.
And this goes against a lot of these earlier sort of notion of fats are bad and fats are causing cardiovascular disease, but then a lot of studies around this ketogenic diet are actually beneficial when done correctly and understanding what types of fat you are taking as well. So the whole goal of a ketogenic diet is to lower your glucose, lower your carbohydrate intake enough so that your body starts producing ketones on its own in your liver. So that's called endogenous ketones, where you are producing internally your own ketones. What we just took before our podcast was exogenous ketones, where you are taking external external source of ketones. So we can talk about that later. But that keto diet right now has shown it reverses diabetes. Virta Health did a lot of studies, even up to 5 years to 10 years follow up, that people have been off medication from diabetes medication because of type 2 diabetes. Ketogenic diet. And then right now there's a big study using ketogenic diet on treating bipolar disorder as well.
So
metabolic psychiatry is getting more recognition now because psychiatrists start to notice that a lot of these psychiatric disorders are heavily linked to metabolic disorders. And if they fix the metabolic disorder by using ketogenic diet or any other interventions that reduces their insulin resistance and help them be more metabolically flexible, then perhaps the brain will also have a better time in producing ATP or energy and not have that energy deficit that will cause all these types of diseases down the road.
How about with autism?
Autism,
metabolic psychology.
Dr. Chris Palmer from Harvard, he talked about this. I interviewed him on our HVMN podcast a while ago, and he did say that it is also very much linked, especially from the mother from the mothers who are metabolically dysfunctional. It increases risk tremendously in autism for the kids. But as far as the studies go, I haven't looked that far into the studies since, you know, my expertise was more in the cardiovascular and chronic disease space. But that's what I have heard from the experts, from the psychiatrists.
So we're eating a ton of meat and protein and high-fat diet. And is our cardiologist having a freak out? My husband's a cardiologist.
Have you ever asked him about this?
He actually eats a pretty ketogenic diet, and he eats like steak four nights out of the week.
I think
he doesn't say no to fats.
I've definitely spoken to cardiologists, and I think majority of them are still on the more conservative side and say, okay, you can do it, but monitor your biomarkers, monitor your cholesterol and all those levels, because there are still strong studies that show the correlation between the LDL and cardiovascular risk and all of that. I also have heard that certain people are calling for different ranges, reference ranges, when it comes to ketogenic diet, just because the current range is for people who are on a standard Western diet or standard American diet. So therefore, if you're on a different diet, you should use a different range. But obviously, that requires a lot of study and a large cohort of subjects to really pin down where we're looking at.
So I was just in Tokyo, and we think, well, there was so much protein in terms of fish and sushi and all that, but like no fat. There's no fat in that diet.
The only fat is the omega-3 from the fish.
Literally. Yeah. So, like, does that qualify as ketogenic?
Depends. So if they have like the say tuna belly and like the high fat portion of the fish, and then they're not taking it with rice, then it could qualify. So it all falls down to how much of that proportion is fat, protein, and carbs. Some people who are very strict on ketogenic diet, they do feel that if they take anything more than 20% of their calories coming from protein, they will still trigger a insulin response, which is not what you want in a ketogenic diet.
Too much protein. There's a lot of debate right now about, are we taking enough protein? Are we recommending too much protein? And it's turning on mTOR pathways. And it's also like perhaps causing inflammatory changes.
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that. So I think with regards to ketogenic diet, you want your insulin response to stay as low as possible and sustain that way, right? So when you have a insulin spike, that's what you don't want to achieve in a ketogenic diet. So when you have proteins, to a certain extent, does elicit that sort of response,
mm-hmm.
if you take too much of it.
And what's recommended as an optimal amount? I know that's
a conversation. However, I was going to say, for a healthy amount of protein, it's between, I believe, 0.8 to 1.2 grams per pound of body weight.
Yeah, and some people say now up to 1.5 grams
right.
per kilogram of body weight. So, or per pound, is it per pound or per kilo?
Per pound.
Per pound.
Some people use 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight, mm. or 1 pound, 1 gram per pound of body weight. So I myself, I do about 1 pound, 1 gram per pound of body weight.
Yeah.
And
so
my goals are different.
That's a lot. Like, I'm 130 pounds, so I have to eat 130 grams.
I'm taking 180. Yeah.
Daily. That's like work to eat that much protein every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to supplement it with protein shakes for sure.
Yeah.
Because I just can't eat that much meat and not feel too bloated or full.
Yeah, like it won't even process.
Yeah.
Sit there in your tummy.
So, I think the mTOR is an interesting one.
Yes.
mTOR, even as a scientist, even as a physiologist myself, I can't even say I'm fully understanding it, because you want mTOR turn up in certain instances and you want mTOR to turn down in certain instances. For example, after an exercise, you want mTOR to go up, because mTOR going up helps with protein synthesis. Protein synthesis helps with recovery.
Mm-hmm.
If you are working out, you want the recovery to be good so that you can increase the adaptation, so that next time you go, you are stronger and you have more muscle fibers
right.
to support your lifts or your race or whatever. As you age, I think the consensus is that we want mTOR to go low,
mm-hmm.
because then everything slows down and you can sort of healthily age.
Yeah.
And
for the audience listening, the mTOR is the master regulator of the cell cycle, and in times when there's a lot of food and plentiful nutrition, you know, we want mTOR. mTOR kind of regulates what's going on. If you're in the fasting state, it turns off all the processes, and this is where longevity kicks in. That there's no nutrients around, we're turning down production, and we're doing autophagy, mitophagy, and all the things. So this is, in case you didn't know what mTOR is.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a very powerful energy sensor.
Yes.
It senses whether you are abundance in food and fuel, and therefore turning on all the building blocks, or if you are low on them, then turning up all the preservation, all the mechanisms where you are, you know, preserving energy as much as possible and lasting as long as possible.
So you're saying when we have high protein, like you're eating a ton of protein,
mm-hmm.
you're turning your mTOR to this feeding state where
yeah.
there is more inflammation and
yeah.
potentially more insulin resistance and more fatty problems, fat lipid problems, metabolism issues.
Yeah. So.
But you do need that in order to build muscle.
Exactly. Exactly. So my goal is to optimize muscle mass, right? And we all know by now that muscle is one of the best organs for aging,
mm-hmm.
because it's even directly correlated to hippocampus, which is the region of the brain that is responsible for learning and memory.
Mm-hmm.
It's directly correlated to muscle mass
mm-hmm.
in aging individuals. So as a result, as a 40-year-old, I want to maximize that first, before I even like try to turn down mTOR. Maybe when I'm like 60, then I'll like look into different ways to slow down mTOR, but maintaining muscle mass. But I think having the muscle mass as a preventative measure is my goal right now, and therefore I'm having that amount of high protein.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you have to not take, because life is multifaceted. You can't just take, okay, I'm taking a lot of protein, I'm increasing inflammation. That's just one facet of it. What other things are you doing that is lowering inflammation? I have to make sure that my stress level is managed. I have to make sure that my sleep is optimized. I have to make sure that I'm actually taking in nutrients that are beneficial for me,
mm-hmm.
and supplements that are beneficial for me,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not just I'm taking a lot of protein and work out and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's going to, over time, so because life is multifaceted, we also have to make sure that the other aspects of our lives are in order, so that we are not pushing one side and making that skewed decision that will ultimately cause an imbalance in inflammation, in immune system, in insulin resistance, that sort of thing. So having high protein is fine, but you also have to make sure that your sleep is in order, your stress management, your workout, your nutrition, everything has to complement that. Mm-hmm. And if you are an older person and trying to lower your protein intake because you are worried about mTOR activation, then you also have to make sure that lowering protein doesn't make you lose muscle mass, because you need the muscle mass to support your daily activities, your balance and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And then you make sure your nutrition is there to maintain that whatever muscle mass that you already have, so that lowering it doesn't make your body lose it.
So do you think it's the loss of eating less protein as you age that causes muscle wasting and sarcopenia, or is it just kind of programmed into our physiology that after age 50 we just start losing muscle mass?
That's a really great question. I think it's a bit of both. Mm. I actually wrote a thesis for my master's in biotechnology in Colombia on sarcopenia.
I'm going to read it.
I don't know. It's been quite a long time now. I'm sure the literature has updated.
Yeah.
But what I found is that after the age of 30, we naturally lose muscles. If we don't do any resistance
30?
Training. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Good. If you don't do any
behind
resistance
the eight
training.
Ball already.
But the good news is, even in the 80 and 90 year olds in studies, with a little bit of resistance training, they manage to put on muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So even at that age, you can still put on muscle. And that, in turn, increases their mobility, increases their coordination, flexibility, and balance.
Mm-hmm.
So the hope is not loss, right? You need to just balance that thin line between having enough muscle to really support your healthy daily life, but also not overconsume protein where you are upregulating mTOR too much, that you are upregulating inflammation in an uncontrolled manner,
mm-hmm.
that causes chronic diseases.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we should think less about proteins per se, or like, oh, having too much protein. That's the least of your concern. There's so many other things that comes before that that is causing inflammation, like the abundance of processed foods,
mm-hmm.
The abundance of calories in general. I mean, those are a much bigger contribution.
And carbs.
Carbs. Much bigger contribution to inflammation than having excess in protein.
So a lot of people say that carbs are actually the enemy,
mm-hmm.
that if we eliminated carbs from the diet, like 80% of our problems would probably settle down in terms of insulin resistance and, you know, problems with inflammatory disease and glycation proteins that happen on our collagen and age us. So what do you think of that? I mean, it kind of correlates with the idea that we need to be in a ketosis state all
yep.
the time. And when you have carbs around and in you,
yep.
there is no ketosis.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think that is also true in the U.S. population, where up to like, what, 92% of us are metabolically unhealthy. In that sense, we know that the majority of people in the U.S., have had access to processed foods,
yeah.
carbs, and the consumption of carbs is very high. So as a result, we say carb is bad. If you cut it out, you will solve a lot of problems. That is true. But carbs on its own inherently is not bad, because our bodies are designed to metabolize carbs. And even if you are on low carb, even if you're on a ketogenic diet, even if you do not eat any carbs at all, our bodies make its own carbs to a baseline level,
mm-hmm.
which shows that our body needs carbs to survive,
mm.
right? Our body needs a baseline sugar level to survive.
Yes.
Going back to what I said earlier, more does not mean better,
okay.
right? Everything needs to be done in moderation, and you need to find out what the optimal level is.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, like I said, the easy and straightforward way is to cut out carbs, try a ketogenic diet, and then you lose the weight, you lower your blood glucose, you lower your insulin levels, you lower inflammation, and it solves a lot of problems. But if you want to optimize, and you are not metabolically unflexible, you're not metabolically unhealthy, and you want to maximize increase, you know, muscle mass and all that, you might need a bit of carbs in order to raise insulin, because insulin is an anabolic hormone that helps with building. And, you know, really taking in the glucose and all the building blocks and proteins and amino acids and shove it into your muscles and recover and adapt. So it is, I think, one of the reasons why I love studying physiology, because of the uniqueness of human body. Different situations, like different time of the day, you are needing different things. And between people, even within the same people, the same person, you said different stages of life, you are actually needing different things in order to reach your goals.
What does your body need first thing in the morning? I know we did a ketone shot today.
Yes.
So are you going to tell me ketones?
I mean, my body loves ketones in the morning, because I do fasted workouts, fasted cardio, very low intensity, but I do it for 45, 50 minutes in the morning, fasted just on ketones, and it's worked very well for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and somebody's gonna disagree with me, because some people swear by their morning coffees, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, the one thing in the morning I need is caffeine. But I think that has a lot to do with conditioning too.
Mm-hmm.
It's you conditioning your body. I think our bodies in the morning, definitely cortisol is up, is high, because it you know, sort of wakes you up, and you need some form of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's
don't
fast
we automatically enough. Get a sugar spike in the morning, like when
we
you're
do.
Wearing your
That's
continuous
a whole
glucose
yep.
monitor, you can see just the act of waking up lifts your glucose.
Which also gives me the confirmation that our body needs that first, you know, spike of energy injection
mm-hmm.
of energy demand in the morning. So have something to sustain that, because the spike is just to get you there, right? And then
right.
you want something in you to sustain that. People who love fasting, they would be like, no, I don't need that. I have my ketones overnight, and I will sustain on that keto, which is fair as
yeah.
well. So as long as you have energy, it doesn't matter whether you are having a bowl of cereal or you're just fasting or you have ketones.
Mm-hmm.
I think
it's how you feel.
How you feel. What do you need to get done?
Mm-hmm. How does your day look?
If you need to talk to 100 people at like 8 in the morning and you are the hangry type, you probably shouldn't be fasting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you got to figure out your own
rhythm.
Exactly. Yes. So with endogenously, you fasted all night and you woke up in a ketogenic state. Your own body is making its own ketones. Why would I supplement with more ketones?
Great question. A lot of people are like, well, I want to be on a ketogenic diet because I want to lose weight. I want to lose my fat. So I'm burning my fat. Why am I taking exogenous ketones? This is like almost cheating.
Mm.
Well, the answer is when you take exogenous ketones, studies have shown that you actually increase all the enzymes related to ketone metabolism. So you're making your body more efficient at burning ketones.
Mm.
Now, one shot of ketone IQ is only 70 calories.
Mm-hmm.
You can burn that off in like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So what you're doing to your body is that you are revving up these engines for ketone metabolism.
Mm.
When you're done burning all the exogenous ketones, you're switching it back to endogenous ketone. Now you have a more efficient engine.
Mm. So you'd recommend staying in a fasted state after that?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Or if you're on a ketogenic diet, then it makes no difference, right?
You're
still eating keto diet
right.
or food. Your body will still make your own ketones and you will burn your own ketones. A lot of people also use exogenous ketones to bridge going into a keto diet,
mm-hmm.
Whether they are, you know, their body is not keto adapted and therefore they need a period of time where they may experience keto flu, so flu symptoms because of the loss of electrolytes and glycogen. So they use exogenous ketone to supplement that sort of brain fog and all these symptoms until their body is used to creating its own ketones.
Mm, got it. That's interesting. So what are the benefits of when you take a ketone? How will you feel different? How will you think different?
Speaking of which, we've got about 20 minutes in since you last
yeah,
took a ketone. How do you feel?
I was asking myself that. I do feel clear-headed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like...
I mean, you feel very in the moment.
Yes. Yes.
Because I'm a multitasking ADHD kind of girl,
mm-hmm.
so I feel very in the zone. That's kind of good.
That's a clip right there.
Yeah. Got that clarity.
Yeah, that's how I would describe it. It's the clarity. It's not the focus. It's not the burst of energy that you would get from stimulant like caffeine.
Right.
It is a very subtle focus, and suddenly you feel like, oh, you're in the zone.
It's
you don't even have to try.
Like, I know, it's so interesting.
Yeah, because whatever I'm doing at that point, my brain just hones in.
Yes.
And start talking about it.
Yeah.
And most of the time I look at myself and I see myself in like podcasts and videos, I'm like, wow, I was really passionate, huh? I was really, really into
really
that, huh?
On it, yeah.
I was really on. It's because the keto has really made me, I'm like, wow, it brings back the memories that I've learned in the lab and like just thinking about, oh wow, all these things that could help so many people that could benefit this if they knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my late dad, he passed away when I was 17 from stroke, and
mm-hmm.
he had a heart attack like a few years before that. And if I knew all these different things, lifestyle interventions that he could have done to change his trajectory,
mm-hmm.
things might have been different.
Yes, yes. Well, you're helping a lot of people.
I hope so.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think if we get people to analyze what they're doing with their current life, you really do have to think about trajectory of aging. Like, we have a turning point in our lives, and one day you realize that. As your parents age, it really puts you in that mindset.
Yeah.
My dad passed away last year, and it's a very important time in your life where you realize in the next 20 years, I can choose how I'm going to age.
Yeah.
And if I choose to make the right decisions now, I'm going to have a way better path of aging than people who didn't know. They didn't know.
It is what you do now.
Yeah.
Versus, oh, I'm 20. I don't have to think about it until I'm 50.
Yes.
It's not that.
It's that Western medicine philosophy of don't fix it till it's broken. When it's broken, you look at it and fix it.
It's too late.
It's too late. Yeah, so I love this idea of thinking about how to bring better metabolism to all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, that we really need this. Do you think that taking exogenous ketones can change? I mean, for sure it's going to change your thinking process. Is it also going to change how your skin ages, how your proteins are produced in your body, how maybe potential precancers are taken care of
from ketones?
Yeah, like the power of the ketone.
Funny you ask that. This year in, I believe July or August, a paper was published by University of Toledo, Professor Bina Zhou. I spoke to her. You should interview her.
Oh, yeah.
She did, you know, she was independent of ketone IQ. She was not affiliated with us, but she published papers on butanediol, which is the active ingredient in ketone IQ. And what she found was, one was the renal protection, which is the protective against any inflammation in the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, she also found an epigenetic effect of ketones. So
wow.
Ketones directly affect genetic expression as well as translation into different proteins, especially in fatty acid oxidation pathways, inflammatory pathways, and immune function. So now I can say with confidence, because before I'm like, okay, it probably will, because there's something they call beta hydroxybutyrylation, which is how BHB, which is the ketone, bound to regions in the DNA and directly affect gene expression. We knew that was there, right? But then, okay, what pathway it affects and all that, we were still studying it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's published. They looked at, you know, the genomics, proteomics, metabolomics, and looking at all the different areas from gene to protein to pathways, and they overlap, you know, the Venn diagram, what are the pathways that are being affected most, and it's those things that I just mentioned earlier. And because of that, I think me taking ketones have a much bigger impact than just the 15 minutes in, you know, clarity that I get.
Mm-hmm.
It may actually help me over time to burn fat more effectively, to regulate my appetite, and to really help me with my energy level so that I can be more productive.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I need to complement that by structuring my day, making sure that I'm doing the right workouts, I'm eating the right foods, I'm resting well, and recover well.
Yes, for sure. But it is a cleaner fuel, so I guess to me it makes sense intuitively that if you take a cleaner fuel and you burn that for energy, There will be less DNA methylation changes. There will be less, you know, mutations, and there will be like a less oxidative burn, so to speak. So that you will age differently. I hope. I mean, it sounds like that study supports that idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hope. I mean, we're not getting younger every day.
Cleaner fuel. How often every day should people consume an exogenous ketone?
I mean, we tell people, if you go to our website ketone.com, we tell people, you know, you can take up to 3 shots per day.
Okay.
I generally take more.
Oh, really?
Because a lot of these studies are body weight matched.
Yes.
So the heavier you are, the bigger you are, the higher the dose they are in.
And do you feel less hungry taking a ketone shot?
We actually are finishing a study on appetite suppression with the University of British Columbia, looking specifically at hunger and appetite suppression using ketone IQ. So early next year, we'll have the results published.
Because I think intuitively, I think you would feel like you were in a fasting state, and that when you're in fasting,
yes,
you start to hit that point where you don't feel hungry anymore.
There are 2 studies so far that showed an effect on appetite suppression. One is using ketone ester having an effect on ghrelin, so it sort of suppresses ghrelin.
Uh-huh.
And then another paper was in animals using butanediol, and that increases leptin sensitivity in the animal brains. So leptin is a hormone that our adipose tissue, our fats, secrete to signal the brain that says we are full.
Yeah.
When you increase leptin sensitivity, you are essentially increasing the sensitivity of the brain sensing that we are full.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't realize.
Satiety.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, I would think that might happen. And then, so we get mental clarity, maybe more satiety, cleaner burning of oxidation and fuel processes in the body. And so are there any bad sides to ketones or side effects that you could experience?
I would say, go back to what I said earlier, metabolism is in a waveform, it's all about the optimal zone. Just because something is good doesn't mean that you need to, you know, down a gallon of it.
Yeah, excess. Too much excess.
Too much of anything good is also bad, right? So don't start doing IV on it, you know.
And you mentioned beta-hydroxybutyrate. Can you talk to us a little bit and explain for the audience how that ties in? I've heard so much about it being such a good, how butyrate is really good for the GI tract.
Yes. So let me start by saying, okay, so butanediol is the active ingredient in ketone IQ. Goes to your liver, it gets converted to beta-hydroxybutyrate. As I said earlier, our bodies naturally create ketones. The 3 forms of ketones that our body creates are beta-hydroxybutyrate, acetone, and acetoacetate. They are interchangeable within the body. But beta-hydroxybutyrate is the most stable form, and it's the form that's being transported around the body and gets metabolized.
Mm-hmm.
Acetoacetate usually gets released, excreted via urine. And acetone is via breath. Usually when people are on keto diet, you can smell that fruity breath. It's acetone.
Mm.
So beta-hydroxybutyrate has a lot of functions, including, you know, being metabolized for energy, affecting gene transcription, gene expression and transcription.
Mm.
And so when you talked about gut health, it's usually it's the short-chain fatty acid, butyric acid,
that's in butter.
Yeah, so butyric acid, that is good for the gut. But beta-hydroxybutyrate, while the structure is similar, it's not the exact same molecule.
Mm.
I did ask a gut health expert whether or not they are, you know, reversible, interchangeable in the body, or it can be converted to one another. He doesn't know. We don't know if it can. But theoretically, because of how similar the molecule is, it could very much be possible, but we don't know for sure.
Right. So but that beta-hydroxybutyrate doesn't have its own side beneficial effects all throughout?
Yeah, for sure.
You're increasing levels of that when you take ketones, too.
Yes. So whenever people talk about measure your blood ketones, you're measuring your blood BHB level.
Mm.
So that meter. So whenever people talk about testing your blood ketone levels, you are actually testing blood BHB level.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when we know that the product works. Mm-hmm. Because you want to reach around, like, you know, 0.5 to 1.5 to 2 millimolar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the optimal zone. Anything more than that, it's not really that beneficial.
Mm.
Anything less than that, obviously, it's like it doesn't work.
Mm. In your training, you had some very interesting history that you did defense military kind of research looking at people in extreme stress situations or hypoxia situations, aviators or pilots.
Mm.
Did you find that ketones were helpful for people in those extreme situations?
Yes. There are a couple of papers actually published now that ketones help with hypoxic adaptation. So people who are in high altitude and having altitude sickness, it actually helps them as well. So if next time you go hiking or whatever, have some and see if you feel the difference. What we have found also is that when they're on ketones, their oxygen saturation increased significantly compared to the placebo.
Oh, wow.
So when they're in hypoxia, obviously your oxygen saturation would drop.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're on ketones, I believe it's up to like 7% or something. It's quite significant.
So interesting.
Yeah.
And then during periods of stress or hormesis, when, you know, does the body adapt better when you're
in a
ketogenic state too?
So when you are in a state of stress, a lot of people throw the word stress out there as a blanket covers all term, right? But let's break it down on what happens to your body when you're stressed. You're increasing inflammation, you're increasing the sort of response system. Obviously, when you're stressed, you also your body will also break down a lot of the storage, either glycogen or fat storage, and really flush out glucose and fatty acids. Because your body is like, okay, I need all this energy because my brain needs to work and my heart needs to work harder because I'm pumping, I'm increasing my heart rate. All of this needs energy. So your body is releasing energy from these storage places. So if you think about how ketone works, ketone directly provide your body with energy, and your body always chooses the form of fuel that is the most efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Your body will always choose the path of the least resistance, right? So if you provide your body with ketones, then it has all three different fuels that it can choose from.
Mm.
Glucose, ketones, and fats. And they have also shown that ketones lower inflammation. They have also shown that people who use ketones for performance, they manage to reach a same level of intensity with lower heart rate.
Mm.
So taking all that into account, I'm thinking of ketones directly providing energy that you need when you have high energy demand. But also, I think what's more important is how are you managing your stress as well?
Exactly.
How are you regulating it?
Yeah.
Because it's not a miracle drug. You can't just take ketone and suddenly you're like, oh, I'm calm. That's like...
You have to have a master plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I love it. Well, let's do some rapid fire questions. But one important question, if you could dispel any myths about ketones that the general public has, what would you like to clarify?
That ketones are bad, because people who have only heard of ketones via ketoacidosis,
mm-hmm.
which is diabetic ketoacidosis, is a very specific condition where in diabetic patients you are creating a lot of ketones because your body thinks that you're in starvation, but it's because your insulin resistance is so severe that you're not taking in all the glucose. Even though you have very high blood glucose, you're not taking it in, so all your organs are registering that you are in starvation and therefore creating a lot of ketones.
Mm-hmm.
And that cycle does not have a stop to it, so you keep creating more and more ketones, and when you have too high of ketones, it creates an acidic environment in your body. That's why ketoacidosis. So when your pH, when your acidity increases, it is very harmful for all your organs, all your enzymes and hormones, and it could cause death.
Mm.
So when people hear about ketones, especially when they don't know about the other parts of ketones, they will automatically think that this is something very bad. But I want people to understand that it's a very specific situation where your diabetic condition is very severe, and hence it creates this situation, and not it's an unmanaged
mm-hmm.
diabetic condition.
Let's talk about one best lab test to look at your overall metabolic health or series of labs?
I like this. Fasting glucose and fasting insulin. So it gives you a whole picture. So you because some people who are having normal glucose level could have very high insulin level because your insulin, because your pancreas, which secretes insulin, is overcompensating. So you're already having some form of insulin resistance, but you're not seeing it in your glucose because it is managing so far. But if you continue with your lifestyle and makes it worse, then at one point the pancreas is going to give in and it's going to not able to produce the insulin that you need, and that's when you get diagnosed with diabetes. You want to catch that before you reach to that point.
So check both fasting
blood
sugar and
fasting
insulin.
You want insulin level
and maybe your hemoglobin A1C.
For sure, hemoglobin A1C. And then for people who have everything like, you know, in range and like healthy, but something is still not working with their optimization or they're plateauing and not reaching their goals, maybe also really understanding the hormones.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
as we age, our hormones levels are going to change. And it's going to be different for men. It's going to be different for women. Make sure you are consulting with experts who understand hormones, an endocrinologist who understand hormone very well, to be able to paint the whole picture by looking at all these different biomarkers.
What's one habit you wish people would stop for the sake of their mitochondria?
Ooh.
Or alternatively, what's a good mitochondrial health habit?
Mitochondrial health habit, exercise.
Yeah.
Exercise.
It's easy.
It's very clear that exercise increases mitogenesis, which is increases your cell in creating more mitochondria. But in doing that, you're increasing your energy demand and you're increasing your insulin sensitivity. So it's a catch-all. But if anything, I have to tell people is that walking is too underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I myself underrated it before. I was like, it's only walking. Like, I can run. And I can run. So I'm like, why don't I run instead of walking? But walking has broken through my plateau twice, in which I couldn't like lose any more fat. And then I just increased my steps by like 5,000 steps a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then my fat just starts shredding.
Mm-hmm. That's something in our evolutionary genetics about when you're crossing the country or you're moving a lot, your body adapts. What's one habit you wish people would start this week?
Incorporating walking into your existing routine. Don't go out of you don't need to go out of your way to walk.
Yeah.
I got myself an under the desk treadmill.
Oh, interesting.
I take calls, sometimes go on podcasts. Or just like if you're going to watch a show sitting on your couch, just put it next to your couch and just walk while watching a show.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to watch it anyway. That's what you're going to do anyway.
Yeah.
All you're doing is instead of sitting and doing nothing, you're just walking.
Yeah.
That way you are not really, you then trick your brain and say that, okay, this is not effort.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, you already get like 6,000 steps.
I love it. If listeners remember just one basic idea about ketones today, what would that be?
Super fuel.
It's a super fuel.
Super fuel.
It's super interesting how it's this clean energy and that the brain only uses two molecules, and one of them is a ketone, the other is glucose. So I think that right there is evolution telling you that this molecule is so super important to survival.
Yeah, especially in the case where insulin resistance is so prevalent that you're essentially shutting out the other molecule already because the brain can't take in glucose because there's so much of it that all your cells are basically rejecting it because there's too much glucose now. Like, I can't take in anymore. I'm going to be insulin resistant.
And this exogenous ketone that we just drank crosses the blood-brain barrier and gets in there.
Yes.
That's why we're in this state of singularity right now, this kind of in the zone.
I love this term, state of singularity.
Right?
It sounds so sophisticated.
I think that's how I feel, so I'm just spouting all this knowledge since my brain is supercharged right now.
I know.
So.
We've got an existing study right now in two hospitals in Australia who are using ketone IQ for traumatic brain injury.
Mm, okay,
so these
I love
are
that.
You know, patients who have
Do you
concussion.
Think you could help neurodegenerative patients, like MS,
yes,
Parkinson's,
no, they,
Alzheimer's?
Yes, absolutely. I think NIH actually did a study. I don't know if it was published yet. They did a big study funded by NIH looking at using ketones for Alzheimer's and dementia.
Wow.
They also did see an increase in interaction between the brain regions, even acutely, just one dose of ketones. They saw an increase in brain network stabilization.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so excited that you came to the office and we got to do this podcast. I learned so much today. And you guys just got your ketone IQ into Target.
Yes.
So that is super exciting.
Yes.
And actually, the demand just shows that it's working.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's so surreal because when I joined the company, 6 years ago, we were just targeting athletes and elite, like cyclists, mm-hmm. and people who went to or special forces, people mm-hmm. who just want to push that last 2% to win a race. And then more and more studies came out, and turns out normal day people could benefit it even more because there's so many things. So the way I describe it is like, if you are doing an activity that requires brain energy, ketones will be able to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically is everything.
That's
even when
you
are exercising, you're using your brain,
yeah,
your form, you're focusing, and that's how people feel the subjective difference when they take ketones. They can feel that brain are turned on.
Well, I'm excited to try it this week. I'll report back to you guys. Lat, where can people find you when they want to get more information about Ketone IQ?
They can find me at Lat Mansoor, LATTMANSOR, on all social media, and at Ketone or ketone.com if they want to find out about the company and the product.
Well, that's so exciting. I wish you guys the best of luck. And I know for the audience listening that you guys are always trying new things. I'm pushing the cutting edge of what we're doing in longevity. It's not just about beauty and looking good on the outside. We actually have to fine-tune the inside in order to have the best performance possible. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our new skin launch. It's Katie Wellness. This is skin longevity care with mitochondrial peptides, NAD precursors, glutathione, and GHK. It's all of the new things that your skin is craving, and you need this for skin resilience. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.